Okay, good evening, everyone. It's so wonderful to see everybody. Thank you for coming out. I know it's cold. I know it's snowy. I know it's not easy. But it's great to see everyone. It's wonderful to see everyone. I'm excited. This is my third year today, so that's exciting. Okay, great. It's just a little bit of the outline. It's mostly the same as last week, maybe by one word. It's a long story. There was a major Dropbox incident that had to do with syncing the various devices in the various locations that I spend my life in, most of which are outside my home. So the syncing, whatever, it was a real, I handled it very maturely. Here we go. So just to bring us back from where we left off, last week we left off discussing Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, and we also discussed the various, and that'll be relevant for tonight's as well, and that is the various combinations of Bishul Achar Bishul. So we discussed extensively the notion that once something is cooked, it's not subject to the qualitative, transformational experience, halachic category of cooking, again, when it is related to the way in which it was cooked before. So something that is cooked in a water, ein bishul achar bishul, cannot be biblically cooked again in a water. Something that was cooked with air, or just like in an oven, whole discussion, tzli, afia, all these things. Something that was roasted, can't be roasted again. Something that was fried, can't be fried again. Ein bishul achar bishul, ein afia achar afia, but you can combine these. And that's where we left off last week. We rushed through a little bit at the end. And that was the question. Could we have bishul achar tzli, tzli achar bishul? And that's very, very relevant. What we're going to get to tonight, which is the dipping of challah in soup, which we all assume to be absolutely no problem. Who wouldn't dip their challah in their soup? What could possibly be the problem with dipping challah in soup? But where you dip that challah is very important because, and that's going to overlap with what we talk about tonight, to figure out what the status is of that soup bowl, and we'll see that soon. But the discussion essentially revolves around the fact that the challah is not cooked. The challah is not, I think, are there any more, anybody have an extra sheet?
Yes, I have.
There
we
go. What do you call it? The challah is not cooked. It's not halachically cooked through a liquid. It is cooked through air. It is baked, and therefore subject to cooking once again. So a challah that is baked can be halachically cooked. It can't be baked again, but it can be cooked again. And this is very, very important to keep in mind when you start playing around with what you're putting where. I have a kugel, I want to put it here. I have a boiled chicken, I want to put it there. And all those things are very relevant. You always have to ask yourself, before we get to the questions, the dirabanans of, is this chazara, is this shehiya? The first question you have to ask yourself is, am I cooking? Am I doing an act of cooking? And so therefore, that's where we left off last week. And the fact that the Ramah holds that we do have a concern of afia achar bishul and bishul achar afia, and therefore, like we discussed, putting bread in soup, if that bowl would be the status of a klisheni, which we're going to discuss soon, all those details in a moment, or putting biscuits into tea, that's only a klisheni, or putting any of these powders or different kinds of things, all of that becomes an issue, right? Coffee, for example, instant coffee. So instant coffee, the way instant coffee is made, for those who drink instant coffee, which is, Gula, you okay? You're going to be okay? Only on Shabbos. For those who drink instant coffee, so instant coffee is, not only are the beans roasted, but it also, they make the coffee, and then they dehydrate the coffee, and then they put it into that delicious powder, and it's the best part of waking up, and then you wake up and you make your coffee. So that coffee has been cooked once before. So can that coffee be cooked again? So there is not an isser of cooking that coffee again. We'll discuss the different ways and different other factors that are relevant. So this brings us to, now we've discussed what's cooking and what's not cooking, this brings us to the vessels themselves. And that's where we left off last time. How are you? Yes.
Can we define
sli? I apologize, is roasting.
Okay.
Roasting in halacha means over a fire, over an actual fire.
Okay.
Right? So something that's baked has a baked taste. Something that's roasted over an open fire, that's like when you're driving down Queen Anne Road and you're approaching West Englewood and the aroma of Dougie's is coming at you, that is not a baked aroma. Okay. That is not a boiled aroma. That is a well-roasted aroma. Some dead animal carcass sitting over a fire being ready to be consumed by high school kids, right? So that's roasting. So again, if you roast something, it's still subject to bishul. If you cook something, it's still subject to roasting. So that all becomes an issue. Okay, so that's all talking about cooking on a fire. You have something that's actually on a fire and you want to cook through the medium of the fire itself. The next category that's important is to understand what type of vessel are we dealing with here. So the fundamental vessel in the cooking scenario is you have a pot, it's sitting on top of a fire, and something's being cooked inside. That is called a kli rishon al gabe ha'esh. And that is the ultimate experience of cooking. It's a primary vessel, it's sitting on top of the fire, and if you were to take something raw or uncooked and put it in that pot, that would be a total, you hit the jackpot, right? Total violation of Isser Bishel. There are no kulas, there's no nothing. That is an absolute violation of the Isser Bishel. Now what happens if the Kli Rishon is removed from the fire, right? Which can be done on Shabbos. There's no prohibition at all on taking a Kli, taking a vessel that's under the influence of a heat source, that's boiling and whatever, and moving it off of that heat source. There may be an Isser of returning it on the heat source, but there's certainly no prohibition about taking it off. That's certainly never a problem. There's no scenario where that's a problem. So you go ahead and you have a pot of soup. It was fully cooked before Shabbos. You have your blech. It's sitting there, and we'll see whether or not that you even need a blech if it's fully cooked. But you have a blech. It's fully cooked. It's boiling and everything. And now you want to start dealing with it, so you move it off of the fire. You don't plan to put it back on the original fire itself, so you don't have any of the conditions of returning the pot. You just have it now sitting in your kitchen, on your counter, and it's sitting, it's no longer on the fire. That is a kli rishon, shelo al gabe ha'esh. The halacha is that in a kli rishon that is still yad soled esbo, as long as it is still hot to the threshold of halachic cooking, that is considered something that is considered a kli, a vessel, that could influence primary cooking itself. In other words, you don't have to just be on the fire in order to violate Bishul, even if it is off the fire. Even if it has started the process of cooling off, until it reaches below the threshold of Yad Soled Esbo, it is capable of cooking. And that is true, no matter what the scenario is. So anything that would be subject to cooking, anything you're not allowed to put in that pot when it's on the fire, you're not allowed to put in that pot when it's off the fire, right? So it's not just, oh, the pot's off the fire, now I don't have to worry, or someone removed the plug from the urn and now it's just sitting there, right? Boiled up water, but it's sitting in the original pot. As long as it's still under the halachic bishul influence of the original cooking process, it is considered capable of cooking itself. And therefore, nothing that could go into a pot that's on the fire can go into a pot that is off the fire. What happens if I pour from the kli rishon into another vessel? Okay? No ladles, no anything. Pour from a kli rishon into another vessel. I have a pot, and I'm literally going to pour the liquid into the bowl. And it's going to hit something else. It's going to hit some food at the bottom of that bowl. That is what we call iruy kli rishon. The pouring of a kli rishon. Iruy. Ayin yud resh aleph vav yud. Iruy. The pouring of a kli rishon on to something else where it comes in direct contact of something else. So let's take the craziest case, right? Let's take the challah, right? My challah that's baked, which is subject to bishul. I can't dip the challah in the original pot itself when it's on the fire for sure. I can't dip the challah in the pot even when it's off the fire because it's a kli rishon shelo al gabe ha'esh. Can I pour from the pot onto something else? Can I pour onto something else? Where does this come up all the time? It comes up all the time with your urn. Because your urn is considered a kli rishon al gabe ha'esh. It's on the fire. you're going to release some water from the urn onto whatever is in the bottom of that cup. That is called Irui Kli Rishon. Irui Kli Rishon, we paskin, does have the capacity to cook an item, but not to the degree as the original Kli Rishon, since the water is already coming into contact with the atmosphere between its original containment in the primary vessel and its hitting of the item at the bottom of the secondary vessel. So it's considered as if it is losing some of its cooking potency, but it still has the capacity to cook what we call Kedei Klipa. Kedei Klipa means an outer layer. It can cook an outer layer. So you're not allowed to cook at all on Shabbos. So you can't cook an outer layer. You can't cook an outer layer at all. But it's not considered as if it cooked the whole thing through. Irui Kli Rishon is a problem. So for example, let's say you want to put a lemon in your tea, right? You know, floating lemon in your tea. You're not going to squeeze and get started with schita. You're one of those people, you like a floating lemon in your tea. So you figure, I don't want to start with the, you know, throwing it in afterwards, at the splashing and all the, you know. So I'll stick the lemon in the cup and I'll just pour from the urn into the tea onto the lemon. So that would be a problem. Why would that be a problem? Because that is considered Irui Kli Rishon. That is considered Irui Kli Rishon. Where else could that come up? Sometimes that could come up. Let's say we're taking chicken or meatballs or something, and we're pouring them from the Kli Rishon onto a plate or into a bowl or into something. Again, before we get to the ladles, right? And you have fresh vegetables on that plate, right? Let's say you eat lots of vegetables on Shabbos. We eat a tremendous amount of vegetables on Shabbos, right? So let's say you eat a lot of vegetables on Shabbos. You have fresh vegetables on that plate. Those things are not cooked. They're not baked. They're not roasted. They're not anything. They're just Trader Joe, right? So they're mamish. They're sitting there. They're fair game to be mechal Shabbos. So if you were to pour that gravy directly onto them, that would be Irui Kli Rishon. That would be a real problem, right? Assuming that your ladle is not a klisheni, which we'll get into that soon, if you were to pour from the meatball straight onto the items, that would be a problem. Now, to pour something, let's say, onto rice, what do you say about rice? What are you paskin? Hey, bishul achar bishul. You're not supposed to pask, right? Hey, bishul achar bishul, right? That's exactly right, 100%. Rice has already been cooked. Since it's already been cooked, ein bishul achar bishul, right? So the only question that does come up, and that's how we paskin, the only question that does come up is, let's say you made that rice in a microwave, and we discussed, does a microwave have the status of bishul, right? So if a microwave only has the status of bishul b'chama, and it's not a normal bishul, so maybe that would be a problem. Maybe that would, and that's where the microwave question gets annoying, right? So ein bishul achar bishul, but if you go ahead, and that's why you can't put spices into a Kli Rishon. You can't put, even if it's not on the Eish, you can't put, you know, diced onions into a Kli Rishon, even if it's not on the Eish. And in general, you know, challah, matzah, all these kinds of things, even Irui Kli Rishon would be a problem. Someone, I don't know, left some crunchies that are not in the bowl, that are not fried. If they're fried, then if they're deep fried, then they're certainly considered mevushal, right? Because they were cooked in a liquid. If they're not deep fried, so that's a discussion, if that has a different status. Let's assume they were deep fried crunchies. And they're sitting in the bottom of the, you know, first the kid, I don't know how it works in your house, but our minig is, shalom aleichem, kiddush, fight over crunchies, right? That's one of the, we have a zemer about it. Right? Mandolin? Is that what it's called? Oh, crunchies? Not everyone calls them crunchies? The orange things. Soup nuts. They're aerodynamic. You could throw them at a sibling. You could step on them later Friday night. And then they show up in all sorts of parts of your house. They're, right? It's one of the big Pesach tantrums, right? When they realize at the Seder there's no crunchies, right? That's like huge, right? Are we all on the same plate? Page? Okay. I know there are Pesach ones and they're better and they're cheaper and they're amazing. So we actually don't have soup on Pesach. We have I realize that I want the Seder to move fast. I want to be able to get to the next part first. And I realize that for the amount of pleasure you get from the bowl of soup, you lose a lot of time. Because the amount of time it takes to serve that soup, eat that soup, and clear that soup. So our mahalach at the Seder is we just serve all, we eat the korech, and then we just bring out all the food, everything. Appetizers, meal, dessert, everyone eats, and then everyone's full, and we move on. And then this way, we don't have to spend so much time on eating, and we could get to the singing and the Elio coming through the door and down the chimney and everything that goes on over there. So that's Kli Rishon. That's Iri Kli Rishon. Now, Iri Kli Rishon into a liquid is not a problem. Now I'm sorry. So now, a Kli Rishon that's not on an Eish, the Gemara says there are some exceptions. Things that are very, very difficult to cook. We don't really know exactly what those things are. It mentions certain types of salts, but it's not exactly the same salts we have. But the one thing that we do know is that Iri Kli Rishon into a liquid is not a problem. Iri Kli Rishon into a liquid is not a problem. Why? Because the way Iri Kli Rishon works, pouring from the Kli Rishon onto, let's say, the lemon, so the assumption is that the force and pressure and heat of the liquid coming out of that Kli Rishon penetrates the first layer of the lemon. And so that's why that's prohibited. You can't even cook the first layer of the lemon. However, if the hot water is going into other water, we're not concerned about that at all. We're not concerned about that at all because there's no layer of water, right? Water all binds together at the same time, right? So it goes into the water. You can't say the top layer of the water has been cooked. So you are permitted to pour from a Kli Rishon into a cup of water. I do this, right? Whenever I go running and I come back, I find the water that comes out of the deer part, whatever, the water machine, too cold to drink a lot at once. It's just too, I find it too cold. So what do? I fill it up with cold water and then I put in a little bit of the hot water and it warms it up a little bit. And then, now that's Iri Kli Rishon because that water is coming from a reservoir that has a heating mechanism. That's why I'm not allowed to use it on Shabbos because more water comes in. So pouring that water into my water to basically heat up my water, right? You have a bottle or a drink and you want to heat it up a little bit for a kid. That's Iri Kli Rishon. So, and that water has never been cooked before. Even if you want to say that there's ein bishalach or bishal for a davar lach, because we saw that was a machlokas, but that water has never been cooked before. So that's permitted. We don't assume that the top layer of your new water is a problem. The only time it's not permitted is if by pouring in so much hot water from the Kli Rishon, you are going to make the whole new water vessel hotter than Yad Soledes Bo. So you might think to yourself, when is that ever going to happen? And the truth is, it could happen all the time. If you finish your tea, right, and there's a little bit of tea at the bottom, there's a little bit of liquid at the bottom, the liquid gets cold, right? So this is already a little bit because that's already water that's been cooked. Or let's say you just have a cup and you rinse it out. Better example, okay? You have a cup, you had your tea, and you rinsed it out. And now you have, there's water on the bottom, right? And you want to take hot water and now put it in that cup as a wet cup, right? So that becomes a challenge of Iri Kli Rishon because you're taking water from the urn that's on the fire, you're pouring it directly on these droplets, and there's few enough droplets that you have raised the temperature of those droplets above Yad Soledes Bo. So that one is not permitted to do. We will see at the end of the shiur that this creates a quagmire with regards to the ladle where there are competing chumras about how to handle the ladle. But you'll put a pin in it and remember that based on this, I'm going to answer a question in a second, that based on this issue, it would seem that the best move is to leave the ladle in the soup, right? In between the bowls. Because if you leave the ladle in the soup, in between the bowls, you don't have to worry that if the ladle comes out of the soup and it sits on the counter while everyone sings Yom Zemechubad and the kid gives the Dvar Torah, that totally doesn't make any sense, right? Reading off the thing, and then you have to talk about the rabbi, and then when you're done with that, you have to talk about tuition, and then when you're done with that, you have to, and now we're ready to clear the soup. And one person says, oh, I want more soup. So you take this ladle that's got cold water on it now, or you rinse it off, it got cold water, and you stick it back in that soup. So Now that's a kli rishon shelo al gabi ha'esh, and that's not even irui. You're not even pouring from that original vessel. You're sticking it in the vessel itself. So that's there are scenarios where we have to be cautious when the liquids have been cooked before. So there are poskim that say that, you know, that much we're not choshesh, that to be machmir that irui kli rishon is mevashel the liquid. And be machmir that ain bishul achar bishul, yesh bishul achar bishul for a davar lach, that much we're not machmir. But in general, we try to do that. If we're pouring from an urn, we try to do that on dry cups for that reason. Yes?
That was my question.
That was your question.
You keep a cup under the urn on Shabbos so that people can use it for a cleanse.
Ooh, yeah.
Then there's water in there. I come down and I didn't get up so early. And now there's water on the bottom of the cup. That was how water from the urn. And now I go drive something.
Yeah, so here you're grace a chumrah on your kli shlishi, and you might be mevashel the water in the kli sheni. So yeah, that's so we should try to just give it a dry out, and that's it, and you're done, you're good to go. Now you have something that already landed in the water. It already landed in the water, right? So it's in the water. There are practical suggestions being made here. We should probably be mefarsim. Keep the cup upside down, keep a towel, keep disposables, rotate the cups. Everyone, listen, everyone, okay? Let's get the practical things going also. Okay, all great ideas, all amazing ideas. Okay, don't drink tea at all. Maybe you'll come to do this, right? Also, so okay, so now we have the next situation. We're past Iri Kli Rishon. It landed in the Kli Sheni. And now it's sitting there in the secondary vessel. It's sitting there in the Kli Sheni. Off of your urn into the Kli Sheni. There is a Chumrah that is quoted that we don't follow, but I'm sharing it with you in case you encounter someone who does. And that is to treat the urn differently than a pot. Why? Because the pot, when you pour from a pot, first you remove it from the influence of the fire, and then you pour it into the Kli Sheni. And that's what makes it a secondary vessel. There are those that want to suggest that with the urn, where you are literally pulling it out of the vessel that's on the fire itself, that maybe the stream kind of connects the two, and the cup is actually considered a Kli Rishon. Maybe it would not be considered a Kli Sheni. That's a Chumrah of the Chazon Ish. And that, therefore, you might see people, you might go somewhere for Shabbos, where you see, you know, this one into this one into this one into this one, and you're like, well, what's happening here? You know, so there's no reason to be afraid. They're being machmer, like the Chazon Ish. They're worrying that, you know, it could be that if I open that spigot, it's kind of one long stream. And so, therefore, that, you can't say that's the Kli Rishon. That's not the Kli Rishon. That's basically the fire, the thing sitting in the fire. The first time it hits any other influence of anything is my cup. That's a Kli Sheni. Maybe that's a Kli Rishon, since it kind of binds, the stream kind of binds the two until you don't buy it. Okay, good. Okay, I'm not here to tell you what to do. So says the, okay, so that's the story with the, but let's say you have you had a question. Sorry. I answered it, or? Oh, I'm sorry. It's a good question. Ask a question. You sure? Okay, fine. So the Mishnah in Shabbos tells us the following, that a Kli Sheni is not Mivasha. A secondary vessel loses its capacity to go ahead and cook. And Tosa says why, and he explains why. It has nothing to do with the heat. I have somebody that I, a friend, I remember, we used to sit next to each other in the Beis Medrash, Eitan Meir, and he's now, I think he's the head of Midreshet Moriah. Is that a yeshiva? Rabbi Meir, Sally Meir's husband. So we sat next to each other for a number of years in the YU Beis Medrash, and he wrote a whole article about Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi, and he went into a lab with temperature gauges and started measuring what actually happens when you start pouring things from one vessel to the other. I think it's published in Beis Yitzchak. It's very interesting. So when the item hits the Kli Sheni, So the Gemara says it has nothing to do with how hot it is, even if it's Yad Soletis Bo. If it's not Yad Soletis Bo, then there's nothing to talk about. There's no problem at all. But let's assume it's sitting in that secondary vessel, in that cup, and it's not, and it is Yad Soletis Bo. The Gemara says it can't cook. Why can't it cook? Because, says Tosos, Diphanos Mekareros, the walls of the vessel are in the process of cooling it down. And while the molecules of water are being pulled in the direction of cooling, they lose their capacity to transfer heat to the extent that it's considered halachic bishul to something else, even if they're hot. Because it has to do with the momentum of where they're headed, the momentum of where they're going. I actually used to use this as a mushel when speaking with people working with youth, right? That sometimes we're not exactly, right? The question is, what is the trajectory of the temperature? Is it headed towards something cool or is it headed towards something hot? If it's headed towards something cool, even if it isn't cool, sometimes it loses its capacity to warm something else, right? What's the direction? So if the direction is Tifanos Mekaros, and that's because the walls surround the water mixes all around, it doesn't say static, it's all mixing around, and therefore the whole thing, and that's what happens. And so that's what Tosis writes. Okay, so the Gemara then makes a statement. So if it were just for that statement, then we'd be done. We'd say it's very easy to make tea or anything on Shabbos. As soon as something hits a kli sheni, it's not, it can't cook anything. It can't be mevashel anything. But then the Gemara says, of course there's an exception. What's the exception? The exception is items that are kalei habishel, easily cooked. Easily cooked. What is on the list of things that are easily cooked? You'd imagine they'd provide a list, of course. We have no idea what's on the list of things that are easily cooked. So the Gemara gives a number of examples. This old salted fish, highly salted meats, other types of different foods. The Gemara gives examples of things that are kalei habishul. Some of the Rishonim give other examples. Bread might be kalei habishul because, you know, it's very porous and it gets absorbed very quickly, maybe more easily cooked. So we have a machlokes about how to treat everything. Some say, basically, that whatever we're told is kalei habishul, we should assume is kalei habishul, and everything else might not be kalei habishul. Some say, no, let's assume everything's kalei habishul, unless we know otherwise. So this becomes a whole discussion. What is called, what could really be done inside of a kli sheni, and how do we really paskin? So most poskim say that essentially what we do is anything that is porous or flaky or very ground up or easily transforms. Like if you were to put an egg in water that was over Yad Soletis Bo, there would be some movement there in the cooking process. So you could tell that it does cook easily. It does, you know, it doesn't take, you know, that much to make some movement there. So items that are, and very, very finely ground spices. I'm not talking about like if you have like leaves of basil, but you have like ground up pepper and ground, very finely ground up onion powder and these kinds of things. So to put that in a kli sheni, we assume that those kinds of spices, we assume that that's probably an issue of kalei habishul. So therefore, we don't put it in a kli sheni, which leads us to our tea. That's why a lot of people assume that, first of all, you put the tea bag in the thing, even in a kli sheni, and you watch the whole water. I mean, if you were to do an experiment to put a tea bag in a kli rishon shelo agabia esh and a kli sheni, and you look at the two, you know, you would see the same. And if you then you put in the, it looks almost the same. It looks almost, even a nayim rose, that it looks almost the same. So most assume that tea is kalei habishul and should not be cooked in a kli sheni, which means you should not take water out of your urn into your cup and then go ahead and put the tea bag in that cup. You should know that there is a tradition from Brisk that they, in the Beis Harad or Soloveitchik's family, that there is no bishul in a kli sheni, and the only things we worry about are the things it says in the Gemara, and therefore they used to make tea in a kli sheni. Many, many, many people talk of having seen the Rav made tea in a kli sheni, not because he's a lonely man of faith, or engaging modernity, or saving the state of Israel, or teaching Gemara at Stern, but because he had a tradition from Reb Chaim, he had a tradition from his grandfather, and in Brisk, who were, you know, very textually oriented people, this is what they saw, this is what they held, that there was no issue of Bishul in a Klisheni. But most of us would not make tea unless you have that tradition. If you have that tradition in your family and it's substantiated, that it comes from somewhere substantial and not just out of ignorance, but that's the minig of your family. So, kol hakavod, I would eat in your house. So, if you'd invite me. But if you don't have that minig, so then we go one more phase. And what is that? The kli shlishi. So now the waters come out of the urn into the kli, and now we go from the kli into another kli. Now it's sitting in that third vessel. In that third vessel, many poskim, that there is no bishul in a kli shlishi, because Chazal never talked about a kli shlishi. They just never brought it up. They never discussed it. The assumption was that the kalei abishul cook in the kli sheni, the kalei abishul don't cook in the kli shlishi. The Mishnah Berura is machmir on kalei abishul in kli shlishi, which is why his recommendation of making tea on Shabbos is not to use tea bags at all, and to use tea essence, right? Now, is that like essence, like the essence of? That's what that means. So the tea essence, which involves another thing to remember on Erev Shabbos, very important, and involves, I guess, cooking up almost like a tea concentrate, where you will then go ahead and have that around. And then you're in good shape. You take the tea concentrate, and you could pour that into your kli, and you have your tea essence, and you make your tea on Shabbos. Rav Moshe and others held that there was no problem with a kli shlishi. We never heard of anything beyond kli sheni, and so therefore, there's no issue. Certainly, the lemon, by the time it hits the kli shlishi, is certainly not an issue. And there's a discussion if you should, is lemon kalei abishul, right? The lemons cook quickly. I don't know, right? So that's a discussion. But certainly if you stick it in the kli shlishi, and this is assuming that the kli shlishi is more than Yad Soledes Bo. There does not have to be a temperature deterioration in order to effectuate any of this. These are halachic statuses. They are not anchored to actual temperatures. Once you actually dip below Yad Soledes Bo, then there's no issue anyway. You don't need anything. So that's the those kinds of things could go in a kli sheni. So one a kli shlishi. So one of the things that we do, so different people do different things with instant coffee. A lot of people will make instant coffee in a kli sheni, since the instant coffee has been previously cooked. So ein bishul achar bishul. So you won't do so. There is a discussion in the poskim. Can you put the coffee in first and put the water onto the coffee? So we say ein bishul achar bishul. So why would that be a problem? So some say it's just too much, too close, too much derech bishul bekach, a little bit too close. But many are certainly if it's in a kli sheni and you're putting it in the kli sheni, there's no question of kalei habishul. There's no question of it being easily cooked because it's already been cooked. There's no problem whatsoever. So the Shiloh came up. I don't know how many people here are holding by Starbucks, right? But Starbucks has a instant coffee called Via.
Yeah.
Via. So Via was Starbucks' solution to all of the snobs who hate instant coffee but can't get to a Starbucks at every single moment, right? And certainly before the Tkufa of, what do you call it? Of Keurigs, which if we could even imagine such a generation that had to make filtered coffee, you know, with a machine and a pot and all these other things, we can even imagine such a thing. So, in the olden days, Starbucks came up with this chiddush. What's the chiddush of Via? The chiddush is that some of it is actually instant coffee. It's Starbucks coffee. That was, the beans were roasted. And then the coffee was cooked, and it was made. And then it was dried, and it was put into a powder. But not everybody likes that. You want kind of that tam, the fresh tam of the via. You want the tam of the freshness. So what they did was they combined it with something called micro-grinded coffee, which means they took actual coffee that was not previously cooked, but was roasted, and they grind it up in a very, very, very fine powder, so that even though normally if you were to take coffee grounds and mix them up in a cup, right, unless you're holding by French press, and you, right? So if you just mix them up in a cup, that's not, that's what we call coffee in Israel, right? That's not, that's you know, more spiritual coffee, but that's not, nobody drinks that, right? Turkish coffee, I think has, right, at the bottom. Okay, so right, but if you micro grind it, whatever that means, I don't know exactly what that means, but when you micro grind it, it dissolves, and so therefore the shaila came up: can we use this instant coffee on Shabbos, even in certainly in a cliche the way we normally make coffee on Shabbos, right? You want to be able to have, you don't want the cliche where already it's getting colder. You want the right, just the cliche, only losing it once. And then you want to be able to put your via in. Forget, it cooks something that's kali abishol. Coffee grinds, if they're very finely powdered, could be considered kali abishol. And if they're not grinded up, then it becomes a problem. So some of the poskim that have weighed in on this did some research with Starbucks to discover that this micro grind component is the minority of the packet. It is not the majority of the packet. And if it's the minority of the packet, then we have another principle at play that has nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos, which has to do with Yoredeya, which is the fact that it might be considered batel berov, which means that in a chanami, you're cooking those parts of the coffee packet, but because they are the minority, they are nullified by the majority, which we can't get into right now why exactly and how exactly that happens. That's for another time. And so therefore, maybe you could even make it in a cliche-y. Rabbi Willig felt that it's a nice idea, but let's leave it in the cliche-lishy for the Starbucks via. I have drunk many, many cups of Starbucks via, and I, be covered to Starbucks. I don't think it tastes anything like instant coffee, and I don't think it tastes anything like fresh coffee. It's got its own flavor of coffee. So I'm not entirely sure what the goal is, but no, that's the story. So that becomes already, that's something we would do in a cliche lishi. Now, what about the ladle? Yes, sorry.
If you use tea essence, right, and yeah, you like very light tea, and you're only putting like a teensy bit.
Put the water in, right,
of your cup. So isn't that boiled water from the Kli Rishon? Like, just like the little droplets of liquid that are in the ladle? Excellent.
It's a great question. That's why you're going to put the hot water in first. It's in a cliche-ny.
Even with essence.
And then put the essence in so that you don't cook the... That's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up. Right? Because in a cliche-ny, we're not worried about that. That was a chumrah on the Kli Rishon. The other thing to remember about the tea essence is it is water that's already been cooked. And it's not just regular water that's already been cooked. It's water that's been transformed permanently through the cooking process. So already that gets us, that's already a machlokas, if that's even subject to cooking once again. So certainly in a cliche-ny, we wouldn't worry about that. Okay, but the big question is what to do about the ladle. Why is the ladle such a question? So now we understand why the ladle is such a question. I'm sorry, yes?
Can you use consomme in a cliche-ny?
What is consomme? Is like a powder. So you have to know what's in there. If there are spices in there that have never been cooked before, and that could be considered kali abishol, then you wouldn't be able to put that in a cliche-ny. That would have to go in a cliche-lishy, right? So the next question is, what? Oh, unless you know that, I don't know what exactly is in there, but unless you know that the parts that are, then that would depend on this machlokas, if we could apply bittul to this question, which is a machlokas aposkim also. So the next question is, so you have your bowl of soup, so now we understand how important this is, because we had our original pot of water, and now we have our bowl of soup, and we have our piece of delicious pretzel challah. How we want to dip the pretzel challah into the bowl of soup, right? Because that's you know, that's just, that's part of what we do, right? Why, on all other nights we dip once, and tonight we dip twice. That's the obvious, that's the dipping, right? The challah in the soup. But we have a big problem, because if our bowl is a kli sheni, we shouldn't put bread into the bowl of soup. We shouldn't put crunchies or nixmamin, mandolin, right, or whatever it is, right, into the bowl of soup. So the question is, does the ladle, which is itself a containing vessel, does that render the soup already in a kli sheni? And that would mean your bowl is a kli shlishi. If your bowl is a kli shlishi, then none of this becomes a problem. You could put salt in your soup and this in your soup and that in your soup. You could put your tea bag in your soup. Whatever you want to do in the soup. You could put the via in your soup. Nobody's going to care because you're already in a kli shlishi. Is the ladle considered a new vessel or not? So this is a big machlokas aposkim. We're not the first generation to use ladles, right? Some poskim say that since this vessel, lemaisa, never ever cooked anything, it was never a vessel that was actually under the direct influence of the flame in a cooking process. It never cooked anything. Therefore, it always has the status of a kli sheni. It's, in the cooking process, a second vessel. You take the water out of the thing, defanos mekareros, it's a second vessel. Other poskim say that no, the fact that you're immersing it into the kli rishon constantly, the whole point of the kli sheni, remember, is that it hits the air as it goes through, and that affects the item and that cools it down. Here you're dipping it inside the actual vat itself. It's under the influence of the kli rishon, like everything else in this pot is under the influence of the kli rishon. You don't say the parts in this side of the pot is different than that side of the pot. It's all under the influence of the kli rishon. So maybe the vessel, maybe the ladle should be considered a kli rishon. If it's a kli rishon, that makes your bowl a kli sheni, and that creates a lot of problems. So the basic consensus of poskim is to try to be machmir for both of these shitos, and therefore they recommend, not machmir for both the shitos, but to accommodate both of these shitos, and basically treat your soup bowl as a kli shlishi, but be careful not to leave your ladle inside the pot all the time. So when you go, you know, when you're sitting there and you're serving your different bowls of soup, even though it's annoying because it makes a little bit of a mess to put a plate down there or a napkin down there or just make a mess and no one will know, unless now we build kitchens in the living room and so, you know, everybody sees everything that goes on over there, whatever's going on, right? But, you know, you leave the thing on the side and then you put it back in. And so therefore, that's what we try to do. We try not to leave the ladles in the pot. But of course, as we discussed before, that creates a different problem, right? That creates a problem, which is if it cools off too much, so as long as it's still warm, as long as the ladle's still warm, you don't have to worry, because we learned, like the Ramah, that ein bishel achar bishel, but odocham, right? As long as the liquid is still somewhat warm, it's still under the influence of the original bishel, so you don't have to worry about cooking it further. So therefore, as long as the ladle still is warm, and that's certainly in between bowls, the ladle's warm. You don't have to like go testing the actual droplets. It's still basically part of the. But if you're going to leave it there for the zmiros and the hak, and then you're going to come back and start dishing out again, so then you might want to dry it off before going ahead and putting it back in. Whereas, you know, the other possibility. So now if you. So this is very important. Nobody should tell anybody, you're not allowed to leave the ladle in the pot. That's not true. Of course you can leave the ladle in the pot. If you're a family that's low carb, and you don't dip challah, and you don't dip matzah, and you don't put in the mandolins, and you don't put in anything that's a problem of bishul into your soup bowl, and you're just going to eat your soup, and there's no issue, you know, or maybe it's not chicken soup or whatever, it's no issue at all, then you can leave that ladle in the pot all day. That doesn't bother anybody. Just make sure to treat your bowl like a kli sheni. There were questions. Did I answer them? Yes.
If the pot is served like on the left over, so you take it off and out of the counter.
we're going to learn that we don't serve from pots that are over the fire on the blech. So once it's, no, it doesn't make a difference if it's on the blech in the zone. We're going to learn there are different zones. The non-fire zone of the blech and off the blech entirely are the same thing with respect to this. That is only a, because this is all biblical, that is only a rabbinic distinction that gets into Chazor. But we're going to learn that. Yes. Okay, yes, Shlomi.
Yeah. When we're talking about a pot that comes off the fire, is it different than, like, say, make a pot out of the oven, where it's not directly, like, on fire?
Good question. It's the same thing. As long as this was the original pot right. that was under the influence of the cooking process, that is a kli rishon, shelo al gabe ha'esh. Yeah, correct.
Okay. And the other one, like what Mark was saying, it's very, I think, common where, like, kids will take on Shabbos these, like, cup of noodles or mashed potatoes, and they'll take water directly.
Yeah, so we're going to get to that. That's a good question. That's a good question. Yeah, the tradition soups and all that stuff, yeah. So we have to talk about it, because those have other things in them that we have to talk about, dehydration and all those different things. The last thing I just want to mention, since we're really at the end, and this is important, has to do with the fact that a famous shita of the Marashal, and even though I know we're a little bit over, it's much easier to understand in the aftermath of everything we've just built. And that is the following. The Marashal has a theory, has an opinion of the following. We know that the reason why the liquid gets the status of a kli sheni is because the walls of the liquid entirely surround the liquid, because the liquid's dynamic within the cup, it's happening to all of the liquid, and therefore it's a kli sheni. Says the Marashal, that is not true when it comes to a solid, right? If you take a potato off of a fire and you put it on a plate, you can't say defanos makaros, that the plate is cooling down the potato. The inside of that potato, nothing's happening to the inside of that potato that has anything to do with this plate. This plate is not fully encapsulating that potato. And so therefore, he would treat that as a kli rishon. He would treat that as a kli rishon. So you have a piece of chicken, okay? No more soup. Actual chicken. Comes out of the oven, onto the counter, onto the trivet. You take that piece of chicken and you put it on your plate. So you might think, oh, I'm in business. I'm now a kli sheni, right? And things that I could do with a kli sheni, I could do with this piece of chicken. No, that piece of chicken is still considered a kli rishon. And it could cook something. It could cook something. And so therefore, that's his chumrah. Now, and we accept that. We treat those things like a kli rishon. However, because this is a machlokas, there are certain kulas surrounding this. Namely, the very famous ketchup kula. What's the famous ketchup kula? So now, all of you could write this tshuva from Rav Moshe yourselves. Right? You all have enough knowledge to write this tshuva yourself. Rav Moshe says, can you put the ketchup on the potato from the cholent? Right? Can you put the ketchup on the potato from the cholent? So you might think, no, ketchup's a liquid, which itself is a machlokas, but I think that's really a machlokas in Metzias, because Israeli ketchup and American ketchup, and it kind of lines up that way, right? Osem, you know, like, right? Kind of cut it with a knife, right? So can you put ketchup on a potato? So if you assume that the potato is a kli rishon, you certainly can't put the ketchup in the pot. Now the potato is on your plate. So is it a kli rishon or a kli sheni? If it's a kli rishon, and maybe you can't squeeze it on because you're cooking the ketchup. It's a davar lach. You can't cook a ketchup. So if Moshe says it's mutter, why is it mutter? Because he says, we're not machmir for both of these things. It's too much, too many chumras, right? We're not machmir that there's no bishul, that there's bishulach or bishul for a davar lach, and that the solid is considered a kli rishon. Too many chumras. So he says, already then, we say you could go ahead and pour the ketchup on. The other things that we're makel on also is if you have a dover gush that's immersed in a dover lach. Like, for example, let's say you have your bowl of soup and it's got carrots in it and parsnip in it and chicken in it, but it's all in a liquid. So we would not treat solids that are within liquids as a kli rishon. We would not treat that as a kli rishon. It's not like you have to be careful that your challah does not hit your carrot in your soup, which is a good question. Why not? since it's in a kli sheni or kli shlishi, maybe you should treat that like a kli sheni, right? Maybe you should treat the carrot in the soup like a kli sheni because it didn't get the kula of the original kli rishon. But the answer is that we're not machmir to that point. Already then we're more. And this comes up. This comes up with, you know, meatballs and sauce. This comes up also with a very, very, let's say, have a very, very soupy cholent. So, you know, less of an issue. And there's also a discussion with these foods, what to do with the other foods on your plate. That's also a discussion. So some people will be more careful to keep their, let's say, their salads away from the chicken, because the chicken can cook. It's a kli rishon. Shalom agabe ya'esh. It's a kli rishon. And the salad is not cooked at all. So maybe one could cook the other. A lot of other poskim say, you know, you have to make it, and you will go some places where they have special bowls for the cholent, partly for that reason, and partly just because it's too soupy and it gets all over everything and it's gross. But in general, many poskim are not so concerned about that, because that already is what we would call a davar she'eino miskavein, right? A davar she'eino miskavein is something that you do on Shabbos where the action you're doing is not, does not have a result that was your intention, and it does not happen inevitably. I'm sure that was clear, right? So you go ahead and you're dragging a bench outside, and we have to worry that you're making a charitz, that you're making, you're plowing on Shabbos. So you're not allowed to do that on dirt, because you're like plowing. You are allowed to do that on concrete, because you don't dig into it at all. What about just dragging it outside without any regard for if there's dirt, trees, concrete, anything? That is 100% mutter. Not putter. It's 100% mutter. It's mutter because it won't always happen, and it's not the result that you're looking for. Your goal is to drag the bench and move it from place to place. You're not interested in making charitzim, so you put the cholent on your plate and you put the salad on your plate. The last thing you want is the potato of this cholent cooking your delicious, healthy, great strawberry spinach 950 calorie per serving, 42 grams of sugar salad. It's the last thing in the world you want to happen, right? You're not interested in cholent and salad coming together. But what happens? It happens. It doesn't always happen. It's not going to for sure happen on the plate. And even if it does happen, it's not something that you want to happen. So that's a discussion. So some people are careful at least not to pour it straight on. And that we should think about. If you have like a bed of lettuce or whatever, and you say to yourself, oh, it would be interesting to just pour the meatballs straight on, realize that if the meatballs are full of sauce, so you could say that they're already a klisheni maybe in the ladle, and now they're irui klisheni, which we didn't talk about, but klishlishi. But that's a great question, right? But already klishlishi. But if you're already assuming that, you know, let's say there isn't a lot of sauce and it's just like meatballs or potatoes or whatever, and you literally dump them on so you could have this great mixture, and that is something to think about, because you just took things that are capable of cooking and you put them on something that was raw. Yes, that's a great question.
Thank you.
There is a status, excellent, excellent. There is a status of irui kli sheni. So that's a whole discussion. Are there any differences between, is irui kli sheni like kli shlishi or like kli sheni, right?
Thank you.
Great. So, right, can you pour? And it's very relevant.
Yes.
Can you put the tea bag in the bottom of the third cup and put, or the second cup from the third from the thing, or do you add it afterwards? So, we treat the irui kli sheni like the kli sheni. And therefore,
like
in most regards. In certain regards, we don't. When it comes to certain things, it's one of the ways we heat up baby bottles on Shabbos by being makel on that and other things, but in general, we try to put the tea bag in after it's already hit kli shlishi, because then it has the defanos makaros, the same mechanism once again. Yes?
Once you put something on the serving plate, though, you take it off whatever it's sourced.
Right.
And you put it on the serving
now
plate.
Now it's on
a
kli.
So now it's a kli shlishi. So by the time it hits your plate, that's a kli shlishi, and then there's an issue, right? Because the solid is not.
No, if it's a solid, it's not going through this process.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's not going through this process. Right. This issue would not disappear for the solid until it cooled off. Then once it cooled off, then there's nothing to discuss. Yes?
It wasn't clear to me. You said you're talking about the ketchup kula. Is that just ketchup, or you mean anything?
Any condiment.
Salt.
that, right, that's previously cooked, our salt that we use is previously cooked, that is previously cooked, that you put on something that is, that becomes less of an issue, because, correct, because we wouldn't combine those two things. If it's not, the two chumras are, question number one is this actually true, that a solid that hits a second surface does not enjoy the same diminished status as the liquid, since the Gemara never says that. This is a late interpretation. Is that true? That itself is debatable. So let's be machmir for that. That's one chumra. And then the other question is a liquid that is previously cooked subject to bishul or not subject to bishul, just like a solid? So that's also a machlokas. So independent ketchup has been cooked. Right? I don't know. I'm a huge ketchup. I put ketchup on everything. I'm one of those, you know, mamish everything. Anyway, we'll discuss that another time. Spices that were not cooked, you would not put on a dover gush that's sitting there off of a thing until it, like, until it cooled off.
What's the status of honey? Is that what honey is for? It's past
honey germs. Is it past germs?
No, it's not. That's why you can't give it to babies.
Oh, is that true?
Sometimes it's raw, and sometimes it's
it's machlokas. Honey's a machlokas. All right. If it's previously cooked, it would be like ketchup. If it's not previously cooked, it would be, it would not fall into that. Then I would not put honey directly on it. I would not.
But you can put it in tea because it's a liquid.
Correct. Very good. Look at you. Unbelievable. Yes. Another question. Yes.
I make a raw condiment, but I don't know if it has the status of being raw. It's cooked. Ground up jalapeno peppers, garlic.
Do you cook it?
No.
You don't cook it?
It's a raw condiment.
So it's just, yeah. it's raw in general. So I would not spread that over a piping hot piece of chicken. You'd wait for the chicken to cool down a little bit. Cool down below yatzal lettuce bow, which is probably when you're going to start eating it anyway. Let's just remember, before anyone gets all nervous, we generally do not put food in our mouth that's 160 degrees or 150 degrees. You know what I mean? Like, you know, but, you know, and as soon as that happens, then you, but the point is, you wouldn't spread the condiment when it's, you know, as opposed to cholent, where sometimes people put it on their plate, you don't wait for it to cool off, right? You kind of just start spreading things around and doing things with it. That's why that issue comes up. Yes? Freeze-dried coffee. Isn't that how they...
Some of the newer coffees.
Okay.
Freeze-dried. I don't know what the process is.
I thought freeze-dried coffee means they make the coffee, and then the freeze-dry process is what powders the coffee, and so therefore it has been cooked. So if that's true, that's what they say in all the Pesach discussions. So if that... Because they talk about whether or not these things need hashgachas. So if that's the way it works and it's previously cooked... There's some other, if they're doing something else, which they may be, you know, then it could be a problem. Then it could be a problem. All right? Okay, very good. We'll see everybody next week. Amir Sashem. Very good.